Greetings to all across the multiverse. Welcome to the show. I am your host, the Magic Man Sam, broadcasting from the Cloud Post, and you are listening to Magic People, a podcast that goes behind the cardboard and talks with the humans that love this wonderful game. This evening, I had the privilege to talk to Eric Cias, a fellow podcaster and magic lover alike. Eric is the host of MTG Focus Spikes, a podcast for all you tournament grinders and number crunchers out there, whose introduction and show dividers guest star who seems like Alfred from Batman. Trust me, listen to the show, you'll know what I mean. I will link to Eric's show as well as his Twitter account in the description and in the show notes. Even for casual folks like myself, their show is top-notch useful information, and I recommend you give it a listen. Go! Eric and I are from the beautiful West Texas town of El Paso. That's right, Marty Robbins. And fun fact, El Paso is geographically further west than Denver is. That's right, El Paso is nestled right there between New Mexico and Mexico, and it's one of the most unique cities in the country. We talk about growing up in the Sun City, our mutual awareness of our addictive personalities, and what it means to be a PTQ grinder. Spoiler alert, Eric recently qualified for the Pro Tour, which is a big-time accomplishment in this quickly growing and ever-evolving game. So I hope you enjoy my chat with the Spike himself, but before we get into it, I just want to say thanks to everybody following along. We actually exceeded both my download limit and my bandwidth allocation last month, so I'm going to have to find a new home for this podcast before it grows faster than it's allowed to. So shout out to everybody enjoying these sound waves. I appreciate you. Now, without further introduction, let's talk Spike Magic. All right, let's just get right into it, man. Eric, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here, man. You coming from MTG Focus Spikes, and that Spikes part is very specific. We'll talk about it later, of course. And I know that you are down in my hometown, the wonderful city of El Paso, Texas. Is that right?
That's right, man, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, man. I'm excited to talk to you. I don't know too many folks from El Paso, and I know that's just going to lead to good conversation from some end or another. So,
I hope so.
Where in El Paso are you?
I'm on the far east side of town. This is where I kind of like grew up. It's kind of a newer area. So when I started growing up here, I guess my family moved to the east side of town when I was in like second grade.
Okay.
And the area that we moved to was like brand new. And since then, I've moved even further east where they've developed a lot more housing area. And this area that I'm in is like only 5 years old at the most.
Nice. Okay. I haven't been to El Paso in like 4 or 5 years. So yeah. I know there's a lot of expanse. I knew like recently through Fort Bliss, a bunch of influx and soldiers and whatnot came through the city and like and housing prices skyrocketed, and I thought that was wild for El Paso. I grew up in the Northeast, so I went to like Omar Bradley Elementary. I don't know if you know Omar Bradley. Like my high school would have been Andrus.
Okay.
Andrus,
yeah.
High school, so uh-huh. So I'm from that area. My entire family grew up there. I moved when I was 14 up to Colorado where I am now. But there's something specific about El Paso, man. It's just a weird thing. Like I miss so much of it. But I don't want to live there again, if that makes sense.
That's how everybody is, you know. Yeah. And I've actually been fortunate enough to live away from El Paso a couple of times. So
cool, okay.
When I was going to school, to college, I moved up to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I lived out there for a couple of years while I was going to UNM. And then I decided to move back to El Paso to finish up my school. And so I came back, I finished up, so I was here for a couple of years. I met my wife here, and after I finished school, I was working for State Farm for a little while, and then I got offered a job up in Albuquerque again, so I moved back out to Albuquerque.
Yeah.
So I was out there for, I don't know, I guess like 2.5-3 years, and I just recently moved back to El Paso 6 months ago.
Okay, nice. Welcome yeah. back, I guess.
Yeah, so I've been here back and forth. It's been fun though, you know, like the biggest thing that's been keeping me going and keeping me interested in like really being in El Paso is the magic scene here, because, you know, it's just really tight knit, like a bunch of close friends, you know.
Yeah.
I've known so many people for, you know, most of my life since I was like in middle school, and, you know, they're all my good friends that are still here, and, you know, they're part of the reason why I decided to come back as well.
Yeah, exactly. Man, that's exactly why I miss El Paso, is the people that I left there. I mean, I don't know how many people still keep in contact with their middle school friends after not seeing them for over 10 years, but like through Facebook, I still keep in contact with those dudes, and they are still as close to me as they were then. And I think that's something special, like, because I don't feel the same way in Colorado. There's something about like this homey sort of, I don't know, like warm feeling with your connections in El Paso that make you want to either go back there or find the people that you knew when you were there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, like El Paso, the people here are so friendly and they're brought up just, you know, just like their parents were. Kind of more traditional, a little bit more old school, but everybody here is just super friendly. And you know, once you make a friend here, they're like a lifelong friend.
Exactly.
That's just how it always is. You know, two of my best friends, they are both non-Magic players. One of them I've known since sixth grade. He was, one of my best men. The other one was, my other best friend, but, I've known him since sixth grade, and we've gone through so much together, and we've been best friends ever since. No matter like whether I lived here or in Albuquerque, we would still talk almost every day and, you know, just update each other with our lives. And it's just been, you know, I don't think I could have gotten that from any other city than El Paso, to be honest with you.
That's exactly it, man. It's the, there's something about the Hispanic culture that is so vibrant there that I miss too. Like the open door policy, man. Like, I went back the last time I was there, like 4 years ago. I visited my middle school friend who lived near me when we grew up listening to like System of a Down together, skateboarding every day. and the second I knocked on their door, they invited me in. The mom cooked me like a couple of burritos. We just talked for hours and hours, and it's nuts, man. You're right. There's something about that city. I don't know if you know the Mars Volta.
Yeah, of course.
By chance? Okay, I figured so. Yeah,
of course I do.
Yeah, man. Omar, in an interview once, he said, El Paso is such a unique place because it's the border city. And so anybody from the States will tell you that El Paso is not Texas or the United States. And anybody from Mexico will tell you that Juarez is not Mexico. And so you have this very unique intersection of both these cultures. It's like a collision in a way that, and it's not either one. It's its own little entity. And so I always hang on to that description. And anybody from El Paso, I think, understands it a little bit better, you know?
Right, yeah. You know, being that El Paso borders Mexico and New Mexico, you get a lot of the culture from, you know, Mexico and from New Mexico and from Texas, all kind of like intermingled into this wonderful melting pot of just awesome people. And
exactly.
I don't think you can get that anywhere else.
Nowhere else, man. I can attest to it. I've been to more than a few places, you know, and El Paso is its own thing forever and ever. So what's the Magic scene like then?
So the Magic scene is pretty cool. I mean, it was really dead. Like El Paso, you have to understand, for those of you like listening to this that aren't from El Paso or have never visited El Paso, I don't blame you because it's probably a city that you've never heard of.
Sure.
But, you know, this town, I say town like it's small, and it's not anymore. It's a bigger city now. It's the size of, let's say, maybe like Albuquerque, New Mexico. Population wise.
Sure.
And then the density of the city itself is a little bit more condensed, in area. But the Magic scene here, you know, I've been with it, you know, ever since it pretty much started. It was non-existent almost when, I started playing, you know, and I started playing back when like Mirage came out.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
So when I started playing, we were playing in the back of a video store, like a video rental store, like a local Blockbuster type of store.
Sure.
They had a back room where they kind of rented it out for parties or whatever. And on weekends we would go in there and play, and, there were no card shops or anything like that in town. And, you know, here we go, fast forward, almost 20 years later. There are a couple of card shops in town. The scene is blossoming. There are a lot of really good players in the area that are starting to come up and into their own. And I'm happy to be a part of it. Like, I'm all about growing the community around here because I want to see the local community here flourish and be, you know, as good as, say like the scene in Albuquerque or even in Denver.
Yeah.
I don't see a reason why El Paso can't reach that level.
Yeah, of course. And so is it mostly a competitive scene, or is it split down the middle? Like, do a lot of folks that play in these card shops, are they Are they out to like PTQ grind like you?
No, I'm one of the rare breeds here in El Paso that are PTQ grinders.
Okay.
So I like to basically just associate myself with those people, and we all go to those the shops that hold more competitive level events. But the scene out here is there's a lot of casual players, especially with the military base here. You get a lot of guys that are in the Army that kind of just like pick up the game while they're deployed or something, and they play while they're, you know, out deployed, and they come back and they're looking for a place to acquire more cars or play some more. And you see these guys come and, you know, actually learn what formats are and learn about things like EDH or Tiny Leaders, and they slowly start to get into it, and they slowly start to get into the tournament scene. And so I like to say that El Paso has turned out more tournament ready players, because these guys that are in the Army, they tend to leave fairly quickly after 1 or 2 years. So we kind of like turn them from casual to a little bit more competitive, and we turn them out and they go back to their hometowns or wherever they're getting deployed next. But
sure.
Yeah, you know, like there's a good mixture of everybody here. I would say though that El Paso is mostly casual.
Okay. Yeah. And so you can sort of be a springboard to like inspire players to kind of take it more seriously, I guess, and give them that transition space. Like, hey, did you know about this world that also exists? Like, I know you like the game. How about playing it on a serious level, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I will always tell them about the more competitive aspects of it. And, you know, I'll always be the first one to help out a new player whenever they ask me for help with the deck or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, and if they want to know any questions about like what it's like to play competitively or travel for PTQs or things like that, I'll always be more than willing to help them, because I'm always looking for new people to travel with and meet and hang out with and things like that.
Yeah.
But
it's so important to have someone like that in the community too, that that can be, I don't know, a guide in a way, you know?
Yeah, you know, I just want to foster the growth in this community. And so anything that I can do to help that is what I'll do.
Yeah, of course. You want more and more people playing that game. That's the ultimate goal of any Magic player. You should never be excluding anyone or bashing them from playing silly decks, or you know what I mean. It's just you'd be constructive. So when did you know? Would you identify yourself as a Spike then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
sure.
Like 100%. Nice.
Spike.
Amazing, man. You rarely get the entire breed in one person, so that's great.
I host a show called MTG Focus Spikes.
Like, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I figured I'd ask nonetheless, maybe 5% Johnny, if you will.
Oh, I mean, just... like, so I definitely identify myself as a Spike, but like there's a lot of Vorthos-y stuff to
okay,
everything
cool.
that I do. Like, I always love hearing about the lore and everything. Yeah. Evan Irwin actually started a new video series on YouTube, going back and exploring the lore of certain sets.
Yeah.
And I always like to catch them whenever they come out.
Yeah. The Forgotten Lore series, right?
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah.
Then,
I love that he's making that series, because it's sort of like what you're doing. You're kind of catering people into the world of Spikes, and he can sort of do the opposite. He can get all a bunch of people that follow Star City Games, which who are typically just out to play the cards for what they do, and sort of like, I don't know, give them a different lens. Like, well, these cards also tell a story, and here's that story, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I also like reading up on, you know, the storyline that's going on in whatever set's coming out. Like, the whole Tarkir storyline, from Khans of Tarkir all the way to Dragons of Tarkir, was really captivating to me. And then the Theros storyline with Elspeth and her fight against the gods and, like, dying and all that. That was really cool too. Like, so I like that stuff too, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I'm definitely a Spike.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to play the cards and you want to win.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm trying to win the tournament. I'm trying to qualify for the Pro Tour, all that stuff.
Yeah, of course. So you knew you were a Spike. What was your inspiration to start the podcast then, MTG Focus Spikes?
So the podcast was a culmination of a lot of things. We decided to merge with the MTG Focus crew, who is Brandon Remley and Roberto Gonzalez and his wife, Erica Gonzalez, who are locals of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So they are all very close friends of mine anyway. And I started podcasting because I just wanted to, you know, I felt like I was listening to a lot of great podcasts out there. and I wanted to see if I could do it as well. I wanted to put out content. So I did. I grabbed a few friends from Las Cruces, New Mexico, and we decided to start hosting a podcast together called the Mana Spike Podcast. And that lasted for about 15 or 16 episodes, which was hosted on mtgcast.com. And you could still find our old episodes up there. And once we started to get going, Roberto started up with MTG Focus. And we started talking and talking about, like, where do we see this going? Like, what do we ultimately want to achieve with this? And do we think that it would be better if we teamed up on this just to get the word out there a little bit more, bring the two audiences together, things like that. And so, you know, we decided to merge with them, and we went through the name change, MTG Focus Spikes, in order to identify ourselves with the MTG Focus crew, but still separate from them and let them know that we are going to be more of a roundtable discussion talking about spiky things like tournament reports, what we're doing to better ourselves, better our game, and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I had a lot of inspirations when it came to podcasting, aside from, like, all the various MTG-related podcasts that I listen to. I listen to other non-MTG-related podcasts as well. Like, I'm just a huge... I rarely listen to music anymore. I just listen to podcasts all the time.
Yeah, right. I've noticed myself having that transition too, and it scares me because I grew up just absorbing as much music as possible, like playing music all the time, and suddenly I feel sort of guilty for, like, getting in the car and not putting on a jam, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm with you, man. Like, and I love music. I love all sorts of music. I'm a huge music nerd. I was in band for, I don't know, like 8 years or something like that.
Nice. What'd you play?
I played trumpet and baritone in band.
Okay, killer.
So all the way through, like, my sophomore year of college, I was a band geek. So, like, I have music ingrained in my soul.
Yeah.
You know, but when I started discovering podcasts, I discovered podcasts like The Ricky Gervais Show and a lot of Kevin Smith stuff. And I would say that Kevin Smith was actually one of my biggest influences in becoming a podcaster. He always comes out and says, like, you know, I think that everyone should start a podcast. I think everyone should just put their stuff out there and, you know, go for it. And if you don't like it, then that's fine. You don't like it. But at least you can say that you tried. At least you can say that you did it. And so I'm doing it right now, and I love it.
Yeah, man. Do you listen to Pete Holmes?
I don't listen to Pete Holmes, no.
Okay. Any particular – have you, like, listened to it before, or do you not even know?
No, I mean, like, I know who Pete Holmes is.
Yeah.
I just never listened to his show.
Yeah, sure. It's called You Made It Weird. I found it, like, a couple weeks – like, 3 weeks ago, and I've been binging. It's side-splittingly funny. I think podcasts are such a great medium for comedians as it is.
Yeah.
Like, they'll sit down, and they'll just riff, and – and a lot of people know that I like to listen to podcasts while I run, and sometimes it gets me in bad positions because I'll have to, like, stop running because I can't breathe because it's so funny.
Because you're laughing so much.
Yeah, dude. So, like, I'd recommend Pete Holmes. Of course, Mark Maron's cast is amazing, too.
Yeah, Maron's cast is good. I listen to The Nerdist as well.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I also listen to Adam Carolla's show whenever I can.
Yeah, nice.
But lately, like, I'm just so engulfed in the magic scene right now.
Right.
That I listen to a bunch of MTG casts. So
yeah.
Obviously, like, even though I record mine, I still listen to mine just to hear how we sound and hear how we can make ourselves better.
Yeah.
So I still listen to ours, and then I listen to Roberto's cast as well. So MTG Focus. And then some other people's casts that I listen to a lot are, like, The Girlfriend Bracket, hosted by Aaron Campbell and three other ladies here in Magic. And I've known Aaron for a long time through the internet, ever since she was hosting the Deck Tees.
Right.
We've just always kind of, like, talked from time to time, and she's always, you know, doing great stuff, and I'm really happy that she got to represent the community at the Community Cup.
Yeah, that was awesome, man. She's so vibrant and present. You know, she has such a strong presence in the community, always, like, doing the right thing for it, too.
Yeah, and she tells it like it is, too. There's no holding back.
Exactly,
she doesn't pull any punches. Like,
yep.
She's just always straight out, so... You know, I think she had a big influence on me putting out MTG-related podcast. Another cast I listen to is the A-Team. They're a Canadian-based podcast.
I get it, yeah.
Yeah, I started listening to them. They were probably the first podcast I listened to, but I listened to a whole bunch of other ones, like Brainstorm Brewery.
Those guys are amazing, man.
Limited Resources, Constructed Resources,
yeah.
You know, so many Magic the Amateuring. I've started to listen to their stuff.
Nice. I'm a big fan of the two like Rocket Jump casts, the Masters of Modern. I don't know if you know those guys, and the Command Zone. The Command Zone is for total casual EDH players. Masters of Modern is more of a spike oriented, just look on Modern. And and those guys always have really good information. It just gets your mind moving about the game and about strategy and techniques. And like you were saying earlier, I think everyone should start a podcast because everyone has thoughts and everyone has opinions and something to say. Like, it's weird if you are alive as a human being on Earth and you don't have anything to say, you know, and podcasts give you that voice and somebody's going to be listening. So,
right. And, you know, like everybody thinks that, oh, I don't want to have just another Magic podcast. But look at how many different ones there are out there. And there's so many like niche casts, like yours, for example.
Definitely.
And then ours, where it's kind of like a little bit more generalized. MTG Focus is even more broader. But then you get more into like a Brainstorm Brewery type of cast, where it's just strictly financial.
Yeah. And part of what makes that so good, of course, is their personalities. You know, I'll listen for the information, but I also just want to hear Marcel like stumble over some words. That's hilarious to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah, of course. And I love Marcel. I met him at Denver, and the guy, he's just the cool guy.
Like, oh yeah.
I just, you know, I wish I could be like Marcel sometimes.
Right.
Just kind of
right.
Like not even caring, just kind of do whatever, go with
exactly.
the flow.
But he's another guy, and the dudes on that cast, what I appreciate is they're also just like Aaron. They're going to say it how it is, and they're not bullshitting, and they're not afraid to like defend their positions and their opinions, and they're not sugarcoating anything, you know?
Right, exactly. You know, and that's one of the things that we hope to aspire to is, you know, aspire to be a cast where the community at large can come and listen to our opinions and hear what we have to say. And they don't necessarily have to agree with what we have to say, but that we are a major presence in the overarching Magic community.
Yep, yep. Now, I was listening to your cast recently, and the most recent episode was discussing the success that you've had recently that I think everyone is just celebrating. And I think from what I hear and what I know of you was a long time coming, lots and lots of work. But you are now qualified for the Pro Tour, so this is my official congratulations to you, man. That's amazing. That's super exciting.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. And now I want to delve into like the road to the to qualifying. You know what I mean? Like, how did you get there?
Oh man. Okay. So like, I have to just give you my whole Magic story to give it to you.
Yes.
So I hope you have time.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I want to know like. From the very beginning, like when did you decide that I'm gonna be on the Pro Tour? There had to have been a moment.
So, all right, I started playing Magic, like I said, around the time Mirage came out, and the reason why I started playing was because I actually played the Pokemon trading card game before.
Okay.
And I was
the gateway drug, I call it, man.
Yeah. So it was like the genesis of all things card related, cardboard crack, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
So it started with just playing Pokemon, and then my friends that I played Pokemon with kind of started talking about this game called Magic. And then as I was going to school, some of these guys were playing Magic at the cafeteria table or you know, just like in the hallway on the floor. This was in middle school.
Yeah.
And I was like curious, like, that's not Pokemon, what is that? And they told me, and I was like, oh, that seems kind of cool. And then as these guys that I was playing Pokemon with, we would finish out our tournament for the day, and then at the end of the day they'd still hang out and then start playing Magic. And so I decided one day to just buy in and see what the game was about. So I bought a Mirage starter deck, like a tournament deck. It had like 75, it's what they used to do sealed decks with, so it's like 75 randomized cards with a bunch of lands in it as well. And then I bought like a bunch of boosters from different sets. I spent like maybe $100. And at the time, you know, there were no rarity symbols, so I had no idea what I had, and I just wanted to learn how to play. So I started playing with these guys, and I started playing with the guys from school. And then the guys that I played Pokemon with, we started to only play Magic. And then we started traveling to Las Cruces because there was no local shop in El Paso where we could play Magic, like tournament style, like Pokemon, like what we were used to.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would go out there and grind like random Saturday tournaments and just, you know, get demolished out there. You know, none of us knew what we were doing.
Right.
And, you know, it was kind of just like a, a fun little thing. You know, we were kind of getting out of town for a little bit, which is, you know, only an hour away, but we were learning about this new exciting game. And me being the type of person that I am, my personality is like, I have kind of like an addictive personality. Like, I know that I could never, ever do drugs, because if I did, I would be completely engulfed.
Yes, exactly. It's important to be aware of yourself. And I became aware of that awareness in myself when in middle school, exact same time, but with EverQuest, with an MMO.
Yeah, I remember EverQuest.
Yeah, of course. And so, like, playing a bunch of EverQuest, I'm like, holy shit, I can really get into things. Like, this is scary. And that's actually the time when I picked up guitar, too, and I just could not put it down. So it's funny you say that, because I say that all the time. I'm like, I'm all in. I'm all in or nothing, you know,
yeah,
with anything
exactly.
I like.
That's how I am. So, yeah. Like, I will just learn as much as I can about whatever it is that I'm doing. Like, if I enjoy it, if I even have an inkling of like to it, I'm going to start researching it.
Yep.
How can I do better at it? Whatever. And so that's kind of like how magic's always been for me. So with something like magic, it requires you to not only like research, like I was saying, but it requires you to actually do. You have to actually play more to get better. And so that's what I did. So starting like my, I don't know, sophomore, junior year of high school is when I started traveling for bigger tournaments. I started getting a little bit more competitive.
Yeah.
And I was still, you know, losing a lot. Like, I hadn't won very many local tournaments to begin with, but I just wanted to see what this bigger tournament scene was like. And I traveled to Phoenix for my first regionals. Back then they had regionals that fed into nationals, that fed into worlds.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And so I went to Phoenix for my first regionals, and I had a deck that I didn't even know how to play. It was a Psychotog.
Oh, wow. Okay, sure. The Psychotog combo.
Yeah, so it was like Psychotog control, like upheaval.
Right, yeah.
And I didn't know how to play it. I just knew that it was the best deck. So me thinking like, okay, I just got to play the best deck. that wasn't quite it. So right. I went like 04, 05. I didn't drop from the tournament at all, but I just had to go and see what it was like playing against these competitive level players. And I lost. I lost hard. But I didn't get discouraged. Like, it's discouraging when you lose, but at that point, Magic wasn't really a huge part of my life then. It was still something that was kind of on the side. I'm only kind of competitive with. I'm still playing video games. I'm still in band. I'm still doing other things in school. So I have other things to occupy my mind. But once I get to, like, go to my first GP, which was GP Phoenix, that was in like 2002-ish, 2001, whenever Ravnica came out. That's when I, like, the fire started to get lit, because one of the guys that were in New Mexico, he actually made it to the finals of that GP. His name's Sean Inouye. He lives in Tucson now, and he doesn't play Magic very much anymore. But after seeing him being so good at it and being so young, he was like, I think 16 or something at the time, 17. And I was like 20, 21. I thought to myself, well, you know, I think I need to really like decide whether or not this is something I want to do.
Yeah.
So what I did was I just tried to surround myself with the best players in my area and play as much as I could. And so I did. You know, at that time we had like Wednesday night tournaments, Friday night Magic, Saturday standard for a box, Sunday standard for a box. And I would play every single weekend. And, you know, through a lot of like, because I took breaks here and there. Whenever Affinity was a deck after like Fifth Dawn, I took a break for like almost a year.
Sure.
And then I came back. And then in about 2000, I want to say like 2004, right after Time Spiral came out, I took a break and didn't come back until Eventide. But from Eventide up until now, I have not taken a break. And I think that was when I came back was when I moved back to El Paso from Albuquerque after I was going to school and I was trying to finish up school. I met up with some old friends who were still playing Magic. And I decided, like, I'm just going to get back into it because I didn't feel like I had anyone else in El Paso.
Right.
And I just wanted to do something to occupy my time while I was going to school. And it was at this time where I decided, like, I'm just going to go for it. You know, I'm finishing up school. I'm just going to go for it.
Yes.
So, you know, when I started playing, we didn't have this thing called the internet to look up deck lists and stuff like that. I had to look up everything through Scry Magazine or Duelist Magazine.
Yeah.
And then whenever, you know, the internet did start having a little bit more Magic content, it was all on the mothership and you can only get stuff like a week later. And so now coming back during this time period, which is like 2005, 2006-ish, that's when I really started like immersing myself into the game and like looking up articles and
right.
deck lists and stuff like that. And even now, like every day is just like a new day. You have to get your fill of information. You have new yeah. articles coming out daily.
Yeah.
Every weekend there's like 3-4 big tournaments going on that you just need to catch up on mm-hmm. and watch coverage whenever you can. And now people are streaming. So I'm just studying and analyzing as much as I can. And,
yeah.
you know, so at that point, when I came back around Eventide, up until then, like when I lost really hard with that Psychotog deck, I said, I'm never going to play Control again. I can't do it. It's not good for me. I'm just going to stick to aggro. And sure. so when I came back, I still had that mindset. And so I bought a mono red deck. I just bought all the cards for mono red from my local shop and played mono red. And I said, well, I'm winning with it, but it's not very fun.
Right.
And then I saw this card called Cryptic Command.
Oh, man, that's juicy.
And I was like, what? How would they ever print this card?
Yeah,
like, this
it card says is... you win. It says you win 4 times on that That's, card if
yeah,
you read it, you know?
Exactly. And I said, I got to play with this card. I got to.
Yeah.
And then what are these things? These things called Planeswalkers. What are they?
Yeah.
I had no idea what any of these cards were doing. Like, is uh-huh. this still the same game?
Right.
And so I came into it and I was like, I got to play. I got to play with these cards. This Jace yes. Bellerin, this Cryptic Command.
Yes.
And I built 5CC right on the verge as it was becoming a deck.
Yes.
5 color control. And I decided to get as good with that deck as possible. And I did. And from that moment forward, I identified myself as a control player.
Yeah. And that's a huge rite of passage. I think when you kind of realize that control is sort of where it's at for the higher skilled players, not to say that mono red doesn't take skill. Obviously it does. It takes a lot of skill, lots of smaller, different decision trees, you know?
Of course, but I think it's a lot of analysis.
Oh yeah, but to take a control deck into a tournament is something that you know going in, you are bound to make more mistakes. You have to be very responsible and actively doing that because you feel confident in yourself to do that. You know,
right,
some pros write articles like, "I don't want to take control into any sort of GP or PT because like, I don't want." To open myself up to any mistakes that is inherent with control decks. So
yeah, that's it's a double-edged sword playing with control.
Yeah, it is.
And I think on either this most recent episode that we put out or the one before it, I talked about playing control as like when you play the control mirror, it's like a work of art, like a dance. And they made fun of me for it, but
I know they were laughing at you, man, but I was like, that's right, dude. That's exactly
I really
it.
Think that it is, but like, you know, it's like a, like if you're fencing, you know, it's kind of like a little sophisticated, but still a little aggressive and, you know, you're still out to win. I think that that's what playing control is like. So
yeah.
Fast forward, you know, throughout that time, I'm traveling for tournaments, I'm traveling to PTQs, I'm traveling for GPs, and I'm just trying to do as well as I can. Come up to like 2012 is when I start like bubbling out at PTQs. And I just keep, I can never top 8 a PTQ for my life. I can't do it. I'm always like 9th place, 10th place. I just keep bubbling at them.
Yeah, just on the fringe.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know what it is, you know, and I just keep trying. And so I'm still working at it, but at the same time, I'm still trying to finish school. Not too much is going on. So like Magic, I'm still pretty serious about it, but not like 100% devoted to it. We go to 2013 for GP Vegas, Modern Masters.
Yes.
If you look through the coverage archives for that particular tournament and you scroll down to like a section where people are talking about their decks, you'll see me holding up Una and a Maloku, I think. And I'm talking about my deck and how I only had one buy and I made day two. That was my first GP day two.
Nice. And that's a big one, too. There's a ton of people at that GP.
Yeah, there was like almost 5,000, I think, at that GP.
Nuts.
So it was at that point where I was like, if I could day two one of the biggest GPs ever, like I think at the time it was the biggest GP ever, like I need to just continue on and go for it. Like I need to just really, really submerge myself into this. And so
sure.
I started traveling for even more and more. And at this time I was living in Albuquerque for, you know, working for my job. I had already graduated from college. I've been married already for about a year, I think, at the time. And my wife was just like fully supportive of it. So I started traveling to PTQs and stuff like that. Now I start to top eight these PTQs. And here we are now, 2015. I play in my first PPTQ in my local area, and I spike that one. And I feel good about it. I feel like, okay, that wasn't too hard. I was able to spike this PPTQ. And then a couple of weeks ago, I traveled out for the first RPTQ.
Right, so, which is a regional Pro Tour qualifier.
Right, and so the top four of this event qualify for the Pro Tour. And I'm playing on a whole nother level now. It's like more competitive than a GP Day 2. It's more competitive than a top 8 at a regular PTQ.
Right.
It's like a mini Pro Tour is what it felt like.
Sure, yeah. You
know, we had a couple of pros in the room. There were three pros in the room. And then everyone else that was playing were all very good players. So there were not a lot of mistakes being made. And everybody brought their A game.
Right.
And I top forward.
Yeah.
And now I'm qualified.
Yeah, yeah. And the full story of that is really, really good. It's on your, like I said, your recent podcast is perfect. You kind of described it as 38 people in a room. It's all business. You know, no one's messing up. You can just feel it. And it's nice at an RPTQ, I guess, that it was 38 people. Like, that's a pretty small tournament, but the skill level is so insanely high. Like, just like fencing, they're going to punish you for any tiny mistake, you know?
Right.
And I love hearing you talk about being paired up and, like, the roller coaster of winning and then also losing and then like winning again and not really, you're not really sure if you're going to top eight, and then you top eight and you have to play Conley Woods or whatever. Like,
yeah, it was like nothing that I've ever gone through before in a Magic tournament setting. Usually, like even at GPs, like I love GPs. I have so much fun at GPs. They're very competitive. They're some of the most competitive events that you can play in.
Yeah.
But outside of your actual match, there's so much fun stuff going on. You got the artist booths, you got the vendors, and you got so much stuff. All your friends are there hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, all the casuals are geeking out and like trying to trade for EDH foils, and it's like a convention, you know. You have both energies. You have the intensity, and then you can go get a hot dog and talk Magic for fun.
Yeah, exactly. But when you go to this RPTQ, there's none of that going on. It's all these guys just like dead set on trying to qualify for this Pro Tour and nothing else.
Right.
They don't want to trade. They don't want to do anything. They don't want to do anything but play their round of Magic and win and go to the next one.
Yeah.
And so you could feel that energy in the air. And not that it was bad. It's just different.
Yeah, sure.
So it's, you know, it's, I would say it's only for the people who really want it is what people are going to go for. And so,
right.
Like, this is the first time I qualify for the Pro Tour, and this Pro Tour feeds to Pro Tour Vancouver for Magic Origins. And what I'm looking forward to is playing on that level of, you know, the best players in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, like, all I can do is prepare the way that I've been preparing, you know, up until this point. And I have no idea how I'm going to do.
Sure.
So
are you back to grinding now? I know you had your little moment of celebration. Is it just going to be strictly here from here on out? Like, you know, kind of like tunnel vision into winning that thing?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm definitely back to grinding now. Like, I took a week off just to kind of relax and be with my wife, who I had, you know, said that she was one of the biggest reasons why I was able to get where I got.
Yeah.
But you know, starting this week coming up, I have two PPTQs, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, and then I think for the rest of May, it's just like every weekend there's a PPTQ leading up to GP Vegas.
Oh, sure.
So I'm, you know, 100% playing a bunch of competitive Magic, trying to, you know, qualify for the RPTQ that's going to feed to Milwaukee after Origins. So,
yeah,
you know, It's the train hasn't stopped. It's still
Right,
going.
yeah, you're right, yeah. Back to grinding, back to the grind clock, you know?
Yeah.
So what would be your ideal sort of finish? Like, and it's super exciting. It's a huge accomplishment to get to the Pro Tour. What do you expect for yourself once you're there, you know, in that environment again?
I don't know. That's hard to say. I think that, obviously right now I feel like my game is at its best.
Yeah.
And it was a real confidence boost to be able to defeat both Michael Jacob and Conley Woods in the Swiss of the RPTQ. So I feel like I could play on their level.
Right.
And so now I'm not as scared going into it. I think that ideally what I would want to do is I mean, obviously I want to win, right? Like you can't go into a tournament thinking like, oh, I just want to do, top 25 to qualify for the next one, or I just want to
Yeah.
cash, or I
Yeah.
just want to get enough pro points for whatever. No, I mean, I want to win.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's obviously the feeling that you have to have going into any tournament. Like, I just want to win. But I won't settle for anything less than top 25.
Nice, nice. That's a good attitude, man. Now, who would be a professional player that you would love to beat at the Pro Tour, if I could put you on the spot with that question?
That I would love to beat.
Yeah, like imagine just sitting across after pairings are posted from somebody and you just annihilate them. Who would you just love to beat?
You know what? It doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't.
No,
Like,
okay.
I don't get starstruck by the pros anymore like I used to.
Okay.
Because I've seen them, all so many times just at the GPs and stuff like that. And like, I don't know them. I mean, I'm not friends with
Right.
very many of them. I just know them from the Magic scene, and everybody's so far been pretty cool, pretty nice. Some of
Yeah.
them aren't so nice, but to me, like I don't care who I face. I just want to beat everyone that I face.
Yeah, everyone is the answer, sure. Who's your favorite pro player then?
My favorite pro player
Yeah.
is 100% Paul Cheon.
Nice. Oh, humph.
Yeah, man. He is like, if you want a good story, like he's got one of the greatest stories ever. He was on top of the world before, and then he moves out of the country, comes back to the country, has like no more influence in Magic anymore. Like he's not on the Pro Tour. He's got to grind everything out, and then he does. And now he just recently locked gold after top fouring his RPTQ.
That's
So
killer.
I kind of feel like my journey is mirroring his right now. Like
Okay, yeah.
he's already been qualified for the last two or three Pro Tours, which is awesome. That's like great for him, but he's had a lot of help, knowing the number, like everyone on Team Channel Fireball and testing with them and everything. And I'm kind of doing that without them, without those guys. But I see his journey, and I have a lot of respect for him. And I would have to say that he's my favorite player.
Nice. That's a good one, man. A lot of people would say any of the classics, Finkel, I don't know, Kai Buda.
Yeah, of
And
course.
you got someone that's in the game right now, and yeah, he proved himself twice. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just his story is, it's a great one.
Yeah, it is. You're right. And he's a great guy too. He's a good presence in the community as well.
Absolutely.
That's killer. All right. So we're all cheering for you. And when is that Pro Tour exactly?
The Pro Tour is at the end of July, so
Okay.
July 30th or 31st through
Nice.
August 1st.
Nice. Okay, so you got a couple months to just grind out all these PTQs, and hopefully get there and just feel real confident like you did. I hope that continues. That's awesome. And of course you got to like grind on some drafts too, which you can't do. I feel like part of you has to feel a little bit helpless at this point. Like, you kind of want to be completely prepared and you want to be able to start now, but you can't 'cause the cards don't even exist, really.
Right. So the cool thing is that I have a lot of support here locally from everyone here. And so I told everyone, like, if you want to help me at this Pro Tour, we all have to play in the pre-release, and any prize packs we win, we cannot open them. We have to draft them.
Oh,
And so
sure.
everyone was all about it, like, yeah, we'll draft it. And then, so we'll do that for the week between pre-release and release. And then once the set releases, we're all just going to buy a bunch of product and start drafting them.
Yeah.
And then the week before the Pro Tour is the week that it'll release on Magic Online, and that's when I'll be able to actually draft
Nice.
online, in like some 8-4s with the rest of the pros who are going to be doing that as well. So I'm going to try and get my feet wet as much as possible. But I have a lot of people that I test with locally that are willing to help me. And I feel really good about it. Like, I feel like I can, I'm on an even level playing field when it comes to the limited portion of the Pro Tour.
Nice.
With everyone else, you know, no one's getting to play with these cards before anybody else. We're all going to get to play with them together. Yeah. That's just how much time you put into it. So as long as I put in the time, I think I can be okay.
Nice. Yeah. That's a good mindset for it too. You're exactly right. Just kind of ignore everyone else's experience. Like, these are all the same cards. We know about it. It's the same amount of information. Let's do it. Let's grind it out.
That's right.
Nice. What's your favorite spike format, would you say? Just like the best format to be a spike and play?
I would have to say standard by far.
Okay.
Standard is always evolving, especially now with like set releases coming out quicker.
Right.
And soon rotations are going to happen faster. The format's always evolving. And so you always got to stay on top of your game when playing it.
Yeah.
That's not to take anything away from the other formats like Modern or Legacy. Yeah. But those formats aren't really very relevant, you know, before this whole PPTQ system. They had the regular PTQ system and they went in seasons.
Sure.
And Modern only happened once in a while. Modern only happened once a year. So you only had one time of the year where it was Modern season, and then you would play whatever deck you wanted for the season and put it away for another year and then see how the metagame changed.
Right.
Well, now things are a little bit different, and you now have the option of playing whatever format in these PPTQs, but you see that not a lot of people, these store owners, are actually running Modern PPTQs. Most of them are running Standard.
Sure.
And so Wizards came out and changed it and said, well, for the Modern PT that this PPTQ is going to feed, you are going to have to run either Modern or Sealed. And so Modern is going to have a lot more of a bigger presence soon.
Sure.
But not quite yet. Yeah. And then, you know, Limited is kind of like the base. I think you need to have a good Limited base if you want to be a spike. Like, you need to know how to build a sealed pool, how to draft, you know, just basic draft, what it's like to be in a draft and like read signals and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, these pro players that play on the pro level, they have to be very well-rounded when it comes to whatever format they're playing in, plus whatever limited format they're playing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, like me having to pick a favorite format. Yeah, I can have my favorite format. My favorite format will always be Standard.
Sure.
Because it's always changing.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to strictly just play the one format. Like,
right.
I'll be doing a disservice to myself if I only do that.
Right. Yeah. The Pro Tour does not care what your favorite format is, you know?
Right.
Yeah, man, that's killer. And I agree with you. Like, we're in this information age. You can access anything ever in the human history of anything at, you know, in the computer that is in your pocket. And so naturally that's going to affect the game that we play. And you're right. Like, there's a new deck every day. People are streaming. People are researching all the time. It's like a full-time job, even more so because you can always have access to all that information. It is cool, man. It's always changing, and thankfully so, because I think last season's Standard was horrible. It was just horrible to watch, and like, it was probably like such a stagnant environment, you know, like Mono Black ruled for over a year. Like, nothing was exciting about that. But now I've seen like 30 decks almost in the past like year that are all relatively the same power level, and it's awesome to watch.
Yeah, it is. I think Standard's in a good place right now. I've been through a couple of dark ages of Standard, like when Affinity was a thing, and then when Jund was a thing.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Original Jund. You know, as a control player, I went over to Jund and started playing this like mid-range type of deck, and I was dominating with it. Like, I went undefeated with it.
Dang.
For like 6 months straight, locally. Like, I just won all the boxes, like every box tournament, I won all of them.
Yeah, okay.
But I wasn't happy doing it because I wasn't getting to play the deck that I wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Paolo wrote an article recently about like his deck building rules, and one of them. Oh no, sorry, that was Willie Edel, and he was in an interview, and he had like his top three favorites, or like his top three deck building rules, and I think number three was like he has to enjoy the deck he's playing, and there's a couple reasons for that. Is one, like, you're playing a ton of Magic at these events, like 8-10 hours of Magic, you better enjoy what you're doing. And the other reason is like say, for example, you take a deck into a tournament that you don't like and you lose your first round, well, then immediately you're going to tilt out and you're going to hate your deck and you're going to hate yourself for choosing a deck that you didn't like, and immediately you're going to think about the deck that you wish you brought.
Right.
And so if you're playing a deck that you know you love and that you know in and out and you enjoy playing the cards that are in it, then you're gonna be less harsh on yourself if you lose with it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, one of the things about this Pro Tour is that the format's already kind of defined right now, standard. Like, there won't be a rotation happening at this Pro Tour.
Oh, sure.
So the only thing that's gonna happen is that we're gonna have one new set added into it. And typically, when that happens at a Pro Tour, not too much changes, unless it's a set like Dragons of Tarkir, where it brings a whole new format altogether into the metagame, like that set did. It brought, you know, the dragons and Silmgar Scorn, and made control absolutely viable again.
Sure.
So I don't foresee Magic Origins being a set like that. I think that we'll be able to kind of get an idea of what the metagame is going to be like, without having to shift too much with the release of that set. So expect to see me rocking some islands.
Nice.
When the Pro Tour comes around.
Yes, sir. Because Silumgar Scorn is an absolutely bonkers magic card. That's awesome. Yeah, he's running Esper Dragons for everyone listening, and I absolutely love that deck. It works on so many axes. It's not a pure control deck, because sometimes you just like turn 5 Ojutai, let's win this thing now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the control hasn't felt this good in a long time, to be honest with you. It's been a while since control actually felt so solid and so almost undefeatable.
Right.
You know, but there are some decks out there that are giving it a run for its money, like the Bant mid-range deck, or
exactly.
You know, even mono red, you know, classic mono red always going to be good against control, but I just feel really good about the deck, and I feel really good about the format, and I like it a lot.
That's killer, and especially if you just keep playing it, you're gonna know that deck in and out. So you're narrowing that window of potential mistakes when you play it, because you just know it so well, man.
Right. Yeah.
That's killer, man. So segueing into the last kind of section, what's going on outside of podcasts and Pro Tour thoughts and grinding Magic? Like, you mentioned your wife. Do you have a life kind of outside of the all-encompassing game that we call Magic?
Yeah, I mean, I do. It's tough because it's, you know, going through this kind of balancing act of life. You know, how do I balance life itself with this hobby? Because ultimately, it's a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, lately, a lot of my time has been more devoted to this hobby than to my actual life. So.
Sure.
You know, I gave a lot of props to my wife, and I still do. You know, she's been super supportive. But yeah, you know, we've been married. This September will be 3 years, and we've been together for coming up on 7.
Nice. Okay.
So we've gone through a lot together, and she's super supportive because she's, even though she doesn't play, she's a part of the community. She's a magic alterist. She does card alters.
Oh, killer. Okay, that's killer. That's so awesome.
Yeah, so she does a lot of great work, and you know, she knows about the cards and stuff like that, and she knows how much this means to me, so she's very supportive. But, you know, outside of all that, like, I just like to hang out and, like, you know, watch movies and stuff like that, watch TV and just hang out with my wife.
Yeah.
Because, like, if I'm not playing here locally on a weekend, I'm traveling for a PPTQ. And so being able to just hang out at home is something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah, definitely. Just get that downtime and let your minds kind of relax for a second. Super important, you know, that's what they always say. So
yeah,
that's killer. The last question that I always end every show with is, what is your favorite Magic card ever printed and why?
I mean, I said it earlier. I think my favorite card is going to be Cryptic Command.
Okay.
you know, because it's the card that, like, lit the spark for that became the fire that became this blaze that is me right now.
Yeah, exactly, dude. It is the pinnacle of control. That card is like the face of control, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the new printing of it in Modern Masters?
Was it confirmed?
Yeah, they leaked an image like a few hours ago. And I tweeted it. It's really slick looking. It's confirmed in the new Modern Masters set. And, I love what they're doing with the new modal cards, where they put bullet points for each choice. Oh, and so I think the card just looks a lot cleaner looking because it says choose two, and then it lists all four in bullet points. So I think it looks really good.
I have to look it up now.
Yeah, man.
Because I knew that they had said, okay, there it is. So it's the same art, and they got the bullet points now. Yep.
And the new card frame and the new font. Yeah, the new card frame. Looks real slick.
I like it. I can definitely get behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of those cards, I don't know. I think it's just like an obvious design choice to lay it out that way, you know, with all the modes. So so I'm happy to see that, especially for a casual player like me who I have a profane command that was printed recently, and it has the new modal sort of out, you know, like frame outline, like what I was just saying.
Uh-huh.
But then in the same deck, I'm running Primal Command, which doesn't, and that bothers me, you know, because like Primal Command is just a wall of text, and so hopefully they complete the cycle. I know they're printing the blue and black commands. Hopefully they print the rest in the new sets. We'll see that soon enough. But Cryptic Command is your choice?
Yeah, Cryptic Command's going to be it for me. I definitely I can't step away from that. Although Jace the Mind Sculptor would be a close second for me.
Sure, sure. Do you get to cube a lot by chance?
I do. Usually only on Magic Online, but a couple of friends locally do have cubes that we get to play with from time to time. And then up in Albuquerque, I had a friend who we got to cube with all the time. Nice. And so every time we go to GPs together, he brought his cube, and in between rounds or like during the buy rounds, we would cube. And so it's actually one of my favorite formats to do.
Yeah,
that,
man.
Along with EDH also. Like EDH is a good way for me to kind of like unwind and not really care about performing well.
Good.
I have like a pretty okay Aloro deck. Like it's not very super oppressive, but it's still very good. And so Esper being like the shard that I identify with, I gotta play Aloro, and
of course.
So I have the Judge promo Aloro as my general.
Killer.
And I play with all, you know, a bunch of like my favorite cards ever. So
you're playing Cryptic Command, I hope.
Yeah,
good,
obviously.
Good, obviously. That's killer. It's rare to have like a spike player actually kind of delve into EDH as well, but you're exactly right. It's the completely opposite, you know, side of the world of playing Magic, and sometimes it's nice to just sit back, relax, play some cards still and not worry about what's your life total at, you know. Let's just have some pizza and beer and chill.
Oh man. Well, not with Aloro. With Aloro, I've always
You're right.
I have to be the one keeping track of life for everyone.
You're right.
In my pod, I'm like the only one keeping track of life. And I'm always doing, like, I think I have the pen in my hand more than I actually have the cards in my hand.
Yeah, sure. Give it to yourself, man.
Yeah. But it's okay. It's like super fun for me because I feel just like, you know, even though I dirtle around and sometimes somebody just like combos off on me, there's always like that thought in my mind, like, ooh, I just needed one more turn and I would have had you.
Yeah.
Like, my Felidar Sovereign would have been protected if you hadn't had drawn this or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoy all formats.
You just love the game.
I love the game, man. It's
That's it, man.
It's the biggest part of my life right now.
That's it. That's all it takes, man. You just got to love the game. So I'm happy for you, man. We're rooting for you. In a couple years, I'm going to see you in the list of Platinum All-Stars. I know it, because it's your due time, you know?
I hope.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you on coverage. Let's get you to coverage. That would be killer. Let's get Eric on the Pro Tour coverage. That would be the best.
Let's hope.
But until then, man, just keep doing your thing. I will promote the heck out of you in the show notes and in the outro for the show. And it was great talking to you.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, you got it, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right.
You just gotta love the game. This guy loves the game. You can tell. He's been busting his butt for it, and we're all cheering for you, like I said. If you want to show Eric some support, you better do it through Twitter. I'll link to his Twitter, and you gotta follow his podcast, like I said at the beginning. His podcast is great. He's a great dude. He's a genuine dude. You could just tell. So stoked to talk with him. All right, this is my wrap-up for the show today. What's going on in my life? In about a week, actually this Sunday, I will be moving back to Boulder, Colorado, which is where I went to school at the university level, at the University of Colorado Boulder. That's where I will be living this summer again, which I'm super, super stoked to be there. Boulder's amazing. Boulder is full of people that just want to be outside all the time. And that kind of culture can kind of... It can be a little exhausting, but I'm excited to live there this summer while I work at camp. So yeah, I'll be packing up my entire my entire life and moving to Boulder, living with a couple of random roommates. Gonna have the time of my life this summer, and I'm just excited to get outside. Other than that, just been following Magic. I played Tiny Leaders last Saturday, and I played my buddy Shu Yun deck, which was just a combination of my favorite cards. If you know anything about me, you know I'm an Izzet mage at heart and a Jeskai dude at my second heart. And the Shu Yun deck has like Delver of Secrets, Young Pyromancer, Monastery Mentor. It has Seeker of the Way. It has Lightning Bolt. It has Snapcaster Mage. It has Boros Charm. Well, I want Kirk to put in a Boros Charm. Kirk, if you're listening, put in a Boros Charm, man. It has Reman, Mental Misstep, everything that I just love to play. I might even throw a Gutter Snipe in there. And it was really fun. Tiny Leaders is really, really fun. I'd love to make a real Shu Yun deck of my own. And I'd love to get into Modern. I want to play Blue-Red Delver. But Scalding Tarns, man. Scalding Tarns, gosh. $50 a card. I can't justify that. Anyway, that's what's up with me. Magic People number 6 is now over. Thanks for listening, guys. I will talk to you very, very soon. Keep your heads up. Get outside. Go love life. Cheers.